Yo, what's going on out there? This is Level Up with Ryan Hodge. I want to thank everybody for tuning in today. We got another great episode for you all out there. Hopefully we learn something, find out some new info, whatever you want to call it, but that's what we're here for. We're going to level up. Hey, but before we do, we want to shout out Hindsight Media Radio for putting this whole thing together. Also, I need you to log into RyanHodgeBooks.com and check out some of my novels. There's 9 of them up there. A little bit of something for everybody. And if you can't find something for yourself, hey, maybe you'll phone a friend. And maybe there'll be something up there for them. Either way, we're going to get to the show in a sec. Later. Hey, what's up, good people? We back for another episode of Level Up with Ryan Hodge. Let's get to it. But before we get to it, I want to touch back on last week's episode. And if you weren't here with us last week, it was about personal responsibility. And just to recap on what personal responsibility is, it's basically when you take ownership for the things that happen in your life. It's when you have control of your own person, your finances, your kids, your place of living, paying bills on time, even keeping a clean house. All of these things fall under personal responsibility. Now, I won't go any further into what personal responsibility is, but I do want to talk about the time component that we talked about last week and how important it is to have great time management and even use your time wisely as far as the things you indulge yourself in. We even need to protect the conversations that we have. We need to be real mindful of the things that we talk about when we're with our friends, family members, and anybody just in general. As you come to know if you're following the show, I always have an anecdote to bring about a point that I'm trying to make. So I'm going to tell a story about how meaningful a story can be or how pointless it can be. So let's get to it. Okay, everybody, here's the story. So the year is 1998. I'm a freshman in college at Howard University, which is called the Mecca. And it's the Mecca for a reason because it's really like that. I'm biased, but hey, I love Howard University and my time spent there. Now let's get to the story. So like I said, it's the year 1998. I'm a freshman, and this is on the heels of Biggie and Tupac just being murdered, you know, respectively a year or two before. So anyway, a lot of times when you're on campus, everybody you meet, the conversation is who is better, Biggie or Pac? And you can spend hours and hours and hours going back and forth, debating, arguing, conversing about who's better. And it never, ever ends in any real finality because nobody's opinion has ever been changed. It's always just, okay, well, you got your opinion, I have mine, and we leave it at that. Okay, so one might think, what's the real big problem? And it's really not a big problem if that conversation is in isolation. But what I found is that we'd have that same conversation over and over and over again as we met more people on campus. And again, no real resolution and nothing came out of it. So it really turned out to be just real entertainment-based conversation. And to further my point, now it's 20 years later, 25 years later since I've been on Howard's campus. And guess what? People are still having the same conversations over and over and over again. Biggie, Pac, Jay-Z, Nas. No matter who the artist is, there's never any real resolution, but there's a lot of time wasted on entertainment-based purposes. To further my point, I'll even go with the conversations that are really rampant and incessant now. And the conversations I'm speaking of explicitly is about sports and who's better. LeBron James and Michael Jordan, Kobe versus Magic, Magic versus Bird. I mean, we hear these conversations all the time. And it's the same thing. It's just a different topic. But it's Biggie, Pac, Nas, Jay-Z, Michael Jordan, Larry Bird, and whoever else we want to talk about. But the end result is no resolution and more time wasted on something that moves you nowhere else other than where you are at the moment. So I'm basically saying we need to have better conversations. We need to have conversations that we can have entertainment from. And that's all cool because entertainment has its purposes. But we also need to have conversations, more conversations where we can learn from. So those same intricacies and intimacies that people know about sports, how about if they knew that about the stock market? Just imagine where our people would be financially if we had those conversations and debates about what stocks are better, which trading methods are better, anything pertaining to that stock market that we don't know anything about. Just imagine if we delved into it and became knowledgeable about it and had those debates. We'd move our people years and years, if not decades forward, just by learning about something that can bring in a whole lot of income to our homes without actually being there to make it. And not having to show up to make money leaves a whole lot of time for other things that you can get yourself into, at least even just being home with your kids, making sure they're good. And that ties right back into personal responsibility. I think back while I'm telling the story about my years in education. Now, when I was a teacher, when I would leave the school, oftentimes there might be some kids hanging around in a pretty secluded stairwell. Now, the good thing is they weren't up to any good. But I'm telling the story because as I was walking down the stairwell, oftentimes I could hear the things that these students were talking about. Unfortunately, when it was the black kids in the hallway, they were having the same conversations about rappers such as Lil Wayne versus Drake, even Biggie versus Pac, and it was just the same repeat of the things that I talked about when I was coming up. Now, I know many will think that it's just some high school students having regular conversation, but my other half of this anecdote would bring my point to light about having intentional conversations with some purpose behind them, other than entertainment. So peep this to the other side of what I was saying. So I come down the hallway sometimes and it might be white kids in the hallway. Now, the thing is, what are they talking about? I hear them talking about developing apps. They're even talking about investments that their parents are telling them about. So there's a stark difference between debating about Biggie and Pac or Lil Wayne and Drake as opposed to stock market conversations that they're having as high school students or creating apps that they can eat off of for the rest of their lives and even turn that into something else, like a job in computer programming. And one last point about time wasters on conversations before we get to the meat of the show today. I even want to talk about how people talk about drugs and alcohol. I've noticed that when people initially meet, the conversation somehow or another ends up, do you like white or brown? And then from there, they discuss all of the different alcohols they like or even switches the conversation to what type of weed do they like, drugs in general. So again, the conversations are just not really meaningful. And even in these cases, they're detrimental. But they seem to know a lot about the topic at hand, which is entertainment based at best. So it's not like we're lacking any sort of brain power. We're just using this brain power to indulge ourselves in time wasters or things that are more likely to bring us down or not move us forward. We need to be more intentional. Once again, before I slide on this topic, more intentional about the things we do, the things we say, and the things we get ourselves into. Time is important, and that's one of the things that we won't be able to get back. So again, I'm done with that. We're going to move on to the next topic of the day. All right, people. So the next topic of the day, I'm going to get right to it by telling another story. So just indulge me for a second. Kim is a single mother of a one-year-old boy. And while she sleeps one night at the house, she hears some noises coming from her son's bedroom. So she immediately gets up to investigate what the clamor is. When she opens the door to his room, she looks immediately at his bed and notices that he's not in it. Next thing she notices that the window to his room is wide open, so she immediately runs over to it and peers out. To her horror, she sees her son being carried by an unknown subject over to his car. The woman yells frantically as she screams for the man to give her his son back. Of course, the kidnapper doesn't adhere to any of her frantic pleas, and he continues on about his duty. Fortunately for the mom, when the kidnapper makes his way to his vehicle, he doesn't have his keys. He taps his pockets frantically looking for them, but he just doesn't have them. The kidnapper realizes that he has to continue his kidnapping pursuit on foot and runs into the woods that are behind the woman's house. Now the mom has a decision to make. She doesn't have a phone in her hands because she just went into the room to check the kid out and really didn't expect to see her child being kidnapped by some unknown man. So she has to make a decision between going back in her room to grab her phone so she can call the authorities, or she can jump out the window and take it upon herself to see if she can get her son back on her own. The mom swiftly decides that her best course of action is to jump out the window and not lose sight of her child. A few seconds after the mother jumped out the window, she makes it to the woods and she can see the man carrying her son through the woods. So she runs with vigor and intensity as she tries to track him down. Unfortunately, throughout her pursuit, she loses sight of her son and the kidnapper, but she doesn't stop for anything. To her delight, after losing sight, she hears her son scream out, "Mommy, mommy, help me." That invigorates her search even more. The mother knows she's on the right track because she can hear her son calling for her, so she's doing everything she can to get to him. For the mother, this is no easy chase because she's only wearing bedroom slippers and a nightgown, so her feet are constantly being cut on bushes, rocks, and other hard things that her feet are stepping on. And she's in the nightgown and it's a fairly cold night, so this adds another level of adversity that she has to overcome. Moments later, the mom can't hear her son screaming out anymore because too much distance is between her and the kidnapper. At this point in the night, the mom doesn't really know what to do, but she knows that she can't stop looking for her son, so she continues on. After several hours, she finds the man laying unconscious on the ground, and her son is up under him. She immediately pulls the man from off of her son to see if her son is still alive. To her delight, the son yells out, "Mommy, mommy, you found me." She immediately picks her son up and runs out of the woods, and they live happily ever after. Now, of course, I'm telling that story for a particular reason, and it'll be the topic for a portion of the show today. And it's about being relentless. As always, we like to leave a definition to serve as a basis by what we're going to live by for the duration of today's show. So to be relentless means to be persistent, to be continuing, to be constant, unwavering even. So basically, never giving up in your pursuit of whatever your goal is. Just imagine how much energy and focus and determination that mom had when trying to get her son back. I know that was a fictitious story, but you need to have that same relentlessness when you're pursuing your dreams. Don't be deterred. Don't think about failure. You have to put in your head that there's no way in the world that I'm not accomplishing this goal. It's almost like you're saying, I'll die before I don't accomplish this mission at hand. Furthermore, being relentless means that you don't let distractions, negative thoughts, fatigue, or any unfortunate situation stop you. I think back to my own life about how being relentless actually paid off, even in the face of adversity. It's actually another story stemming from my time at Howard University. So bang, it's 1998 once again, and I'm on campus as a freshman at Howard University. Now, this actually happened before I was even enrolled in the school, but it was my first day on campus during registration. As the story goes, it's me, my mom, my brother, and we're on campus trying to get me registered for classes. We just got finished waiting in these long lines in the Blackburn Center. I mean, it was hours worth of waiting, just everybody everywhere, people on top of people. It was crazy. So after this long wait, we finally make it to the front of the line. We're excited. We souped up because I'm about to get registered for classes. And this is a major, major milestone in my life and for the family, actually. Like I said, we finally make it to the front of the line and we're standing in front of a woman who was very pleasant and was going to get me all registered for my classes until bang. The hammer drop. What exactly I mean is that the lady at the front counter informed me that I didn't have any money in my student account, which was crazy because I thought I was good to go. As required to get money, we filled out all of the financial aid forms and thought everything was in order to receive all the money I needed to start school and be good. Unfortunately, that wasn't the case. What actually happened was there was no money in my student account, like I said, and the lady informed me that I needed $1,200 to start college that day. And we definitely didn't have any money. So what ended up happening? We had to get back on the road and head back to Jersey. No starting college that day for me. We just went back to Jersey and tried to come up with some strategies to get us the $1,200 we needed. And after a couple days of running around trying to figure the things out, we actually got the $1,200 up and went back to D.C. and paid the school the $1,200 that was going to get me started. But it didn't end there because the $1,200 was just to get me started, but it wasn't the tuition for the semester. And since we didn't have the money for the semester to pay it all at one time, we got on a deferment plan. So that means that every so often you pay them a certain amount of money. But we didn't have that amount of money either. So I was really just kind of air betting while I was at school, hoping that they didn't call me up for that bread because I definitely didn't have it and I didn't know anybody who had it. So if they ever called me and told me to come down to the financial aid office to make another installment on those payments, I wouldn't have been able to do so. And I thought they might have kicked me out of the school. Fortunately, that didn't happen. Unfortunately, over time, the lack of funds did disable me to continue going to school there. I ended up back in Jersey getting a job, which wasn't bad. Now, here comes more adversity. Now, remember, this whole speech is about being relentless. So here's the next piece. So I figured I'd get back to school once I got to Jersey. Now, what I didn't know was that I owed Howard University money and I couldn't get into school in Jersey until I paid Howard University the money back. So it was another delay with me returning back to school. I actually owe Howard University several thousand dollars, and that needed to be paid before I could get back into school, or I could forfeit the credits I earned while I was at Howard, and I wasn't willing to do that because that would have been a loss of time and money. So the only thing to do was to pay him back. Now, at that time, I was only 19 years old, so paying him back several thousand dollars wasn't exactly an easy feat. It actually took some time and a lot of sacrifice in order to get them their money. So again, they closed the door once when I started college there. Had to be resilient and relentless to get back on my feet to get them the money. Then, after attending the school, I had to leave because I owed them money and then couldn't get back in school because I owed them money. So I'm just telling this story because there's always going to be roadblocks that's going to stop you or slow you down. But that doesn't mean it's going to stop you for forever. Now, to finish my story out about my college journey. So what happened was I ended up getting Howard their money back, got in a school in New Jersey, rocked out there for a while. Eventually, I moved to South Carolina, and then I finished my degree program there. Needless to say, my path to getting my degree was probably easier than many people and maybe harder than somebody else's. But It was still my journey, and I took it, and I appreciated it more. That path not being easy taught me a lot about myself and about life. It taught me that things aren't always going to be easy, and sometimes you just got to turn up, stay focused, and be unwavering in your task at hand. It's not always easy, but you have to tell yourself that the only way you won't accomplish your goal is if you give up. And I believe that because it seems like every time you continue on through all of the hard stuff, the adversity, the complaints, the soreness or whatever it is, there's a breakthrough moment. And that's when you finally achieve your goal. But if you never stick with it, if you quit, you'll never know if you could have achieved it. A lot of times you might be quitting just before you were going to acquire the goal. So again, be relentless and unwavering and undeterred in pursuit of what you want. I'm sure we've all heard the quote that says the shortest distance between two points is a straight line. And that may be true, and we often want to take a straight line and get to the point as quick as we can, but it doesn't always happen that way for us. Sometimes we have to do a little zigzag. Sometimes we might have to go around the block and come back to see if we can make it work. And that's okay, because that's what the relentless person does. Even if he or she is set back, they find another way. We have to realize that every attempt that we try the first time may not work, but there's nothing wrong with starting over or finding another way during the process of getting what you want. And to me, that's one of the major components of being relentless, is that even when it gets hairy, when it gets tough, you find a way to push through and ultimately achieve your goal. Man, I hope anybody out here who's listening today had a chance to check out some of the Olympics. Now, I mentioned in the Olympics because there are plenty of stories throughout the whole entire games that are about amazing athletes from all over the world who exhibited this one quality that we're talking about of being relentless. First and foremost, even hosting the games is an example of being relentless because, as we know, the games actually were supposed to be held last year in 2020, but because of COVID-19, they had to push it back. So again, that right there is an example of being relentless because they didn't let the circumstances of the world completely thwart their efforts. They had postponed it, remixed it a little bit, but they actually made it happen, as we saw in 2021. So now I'm going to speak exactly to some of the athletes that participated in the games of 2021. In my opinion, some of these athletes should have their picture sitting next to the word relentless in the dictionary because they are exactly that. The first athlete I'd like to name is Safwan Hassan. This heroic woman is a Dutch runner who actually fell during one of the races. She was running the 1500 meter when she got tripped up by some other runners. Now, here's the relentless part that I want to connect to her. Not only did she get tripped up by some other runners, she actually fell during the race. Now, a lot of people, when they fall during a race, I've seen, they just lay down and never get back up. But this lady in particular, when she fell, she was relentless. What did she do? She got back up and finished the last 400 meters of the race. And as good fortune would have it, she actually ended up winning the heat. This heroic woman clearly never felt sorry for herself, and she never felt that she couldn't win, because had she felt that way, she probably would have never gotten up, but she did, and she won the heat. I'll be the first to tell you that being relentless can open up other doors for you. Oftentimes in life, one opportunity leads to another opportunity, and it just kind of has a domino effect from there. And I use the runner I just mentioned as an example. Like I stated a moment ago, after she got up, she actually won the heat that she was in. And she had to use that heat as a qualifier to run for a medal. So by her finishing that heat that she fell in, she put herself in position to win gold, silver, or bronze in the Olympics. Now, she didn't win the gold or the silver in that last final run, but she did win a bronze medal. So again, had she not gotten up when she fell, she, of course, would have never won the race. And not getting up would have led to her not qualifying to even run in the gold medal race. She is a true example of sometimes in life you fall down, but you still have to get back up and do your best. And she did that. And this lady did it so well that in that event, she got a bronze medal for it. And she actually competed in other events that she won a gold medal. Now, just think how easy it could have been for her to just fall down and stay down there and then make plenty of excuses as to why she didn't win. But instead of making excuses, she found a way. Again, that's what being relentless is all about. You find a way to make your dreams happen, no matter what. With that being said, I want to talk about another Olympian who's actually from the United States, and his name is Elijah Godwin. He's another person that I feel exhibited relentlessness in his pursuit of making his Olympic journey happen. So let's find out exactly what he did. This young man was a track star from the United States, like I said earlier, who actually was impelled by a javelin while practicing one day. The injury was pretty severe, where the javelin actually went through his back and missed his heart by millimeters. So he was lucky to be alive, to say the least. After undergoing emergency surgery, he spent a lot of time in the hospital. Furthermore, all of the expert doctors told him that he'd never be able to participate at a high level again, so just forget about it, basically. Of course, I'm not telling you this story because he actually listened to what the doctors told him. He did exactly the opposite and was actually running and practicing even shortly after the surgery he just had. Whenever he was found to be running, people told him he was crazy and that his best bet was just heal and to just chill out for a while. But he was relentless in what he wanted and he didn't listen. So what ended up happening was he actually trained, and earned himself a spot on the U.S. Olympic team. He actually told himself if he never stopped doing what he was doing as far as the training is concerned, that it would pay off. And guess what? He was right. It was his relentless mindset that told his body that he could do it. And to everyone's surprise but his own, he ended up coming out of the Tokyo Olympics with a bronze medal. Not too bad for a guy they said would never compete again. Again, let's be relentless in what we want. You'll surprise yourself every time if you just never quit. I'm going to close this segment with a quote about being relentless in the things that you do. Water does not cut through a rock with its strength only. It does so by being relentlessly persistent. All right, so we're going to switch gears, and we're going to switch gears to talk about something that I'm sure a lot of people out here can relate to. And what exactly is that? We're talking about people being stressed out. So as we always do here at Level Up, we're going to talk about the definition of stress, and then we're going to talk about some ways to alleviate that. So what exactly is stress? Stress is that feeling of being overwhelmed and just unable to deal with things on a day-to-day basis. A lot of people describe being stressed out as a feeling of drowning, not drowning in water, but drowning in the pressures of the day. And it makes sense to use that analogy because if you picture somebody who's drowning in a pool, just imagine how much water's around them. They're flopping around just trying to get their footing and they're not able to. And it's just like that in the real world. They have so much going on in their daily lives that they just can't get a strong footing on what they want to do, where they're supposed to be, and everything's coming at them all at once. Let's be for real. We have to deal with a lot of different pressures out here. We have to deal with mental pressures, emotional pressures, and physical pressures just from proximity to other people. So we do have a lot to deal with. So let's talk about how we can get ahead of this thing because we really need to. All right, so we've identified the problem of being under stress and we define what it is. So now it's time for us to level up and get to these solutions. Now, in my opinion, the first thing we need to do is identify what type of stress it is that you're under. So for the sake of this conversation and this example, we'll say that the person is under a lot of stress because they're extremely busy and they don't have time for themselves. I've heard about people who are in this current situation and they're always told you have to make time. Now, I definitely feel where that person would be coming from by saying that, but actually, you're not going to be able to make time because whatever time is in the day is in the day. What you're going to have to do is really evaluate your schedule and find out what's on there and what's a time waster. We have to be honest with ourselves because a lot of the stuff that we spend time on, really, we don't have to. You have to be honest with yourself and look at that schedule and say, I can take this off, I have to take this off, or this or that off, because if you don't, you'll always have that feeling of being overwhelmed because you don't have time to do anything. You'll always feel rushed. And the rush feeling is what's going to cause stress on you. And I'm definitely not telling anybody to just empty their plate out because you may not be able to do that. However, what you can do is, over time, start eliminating things off your schedule. For example, you can give yourself maybe 8 months to clear out your schedule. And over the course of that 8 months, you're actually working with intention to clear that schedule. So at least in that 8 month period of time, you know that you'll be able to relax a little bit. And what that will do is, just in your day to day, knowing that you're clearing stuff off your plate, you're going to start feeling better about your time going forward because you'll know eventually you're going to have a clear slate and be able to relax. So basically, knowing that your future is going to be good, you'll be able to relax a little bit more in the present. And let's talk about how it's going to play out. So now it has a ripple effect. So here it is. It's 8 months later. You've cleared out your schedule and now you're more free to do the things that you want to do. Those things are going to bring you pleasure and ease your mental stress. So it benefits you in more than one way. Another thing that I would suggest to help out with your day-to-day stuff is having a routine. I'm a person who lives within a routine. My days are pretty much the same, so it really cuts down on a lot of extra stuff that I don't want to happen. Having my days pre-planned for the most part really helps me cut down on stress. There's a lot of things that happen throughout the day that I don't have to think about because it's already pre-planned. Now, that's not to say that I won't monitor and adjust, but for the most part, I know from this time of the day to the end of the day, this is what I'm gonna have going on. Just apply the routine to anything that we do in life. Something that you initially started may have been kind of troublesome, but after you got the routine of it down, all of the apprehensions and the fears kind of die down because now you're used to what you're doing and you know how it's going to play out. There's actually even some connections to having good health with having a daily routine. And it makes sense to me, and I'll explain why. So let's just picture somebody who doesn't have a daily routine. So what is their day like? You're kind of going to wake up whenever you wake up, and then you'll leave the house and go about whatever you're going to get into for the day because you really don't have a plan. So where does that leave you when it's time to eat? Hey, maybe you'll grab some fast food today, maybe some other fast food for breakfast, lunch, and dinner. So now you've been eating unhealthy all day. And if you're eating unhealthy all day, it's bound to show up on the scale. Your habits of eating healthy are going to show up on the scale. It's going to show up on your belly and a lot of other places. So it's time to get a routine because then you'll be more intentional about where you end up and what you eat. And I'll add this to the conversation as well. That routine is not only beneficial to you, it also will be beneficial to your kids. So they definitely need to see a routine, see a poised parent, not always rushing, because it actually has cognitive and emotional ramifications on your child. So keep that in mind. If you don't want to do it for yourself, do it for your kids. If you are disciplined enough to just put a daily routine in place with healthy habits, you can actually keep your child from substance abuse and all sorts of bipolar disorders. Now, I hope that's worth it to you because, again, we're leveling up here. Remember, the goal of the show is to eat better, live better, smell better, chill better, have better relationships, and just spend better time while we're out here. And it's completely in our power to be able to do so. So let's talk about another item or another thing that people stress over on a day-to-day basis. And we're going to talk about those finances. We know that's a heavy hitter in a lot of communities because the numbers say, depending on what stat you come across, is that 76% of Americans are living paycheck to paycheck. And a lot of them don't have $1,000 up for any sort of unforeseen circumstance, like a car breakdown, a minor medical emergency, or even an unexpected bill that just popped up out of nowhere. Now that we've identified another stressor in people's lives, the question is, how can we get better with it? What can we do to eradicate the problem that exists pertaining to these financials? Here is what I recommend. The first thing a person should do if they're coming up short financially is they need to look at how much money they have coming in, because obviously you can only deal on what you have coming in. Okay, so step one is out of the way. You looked at the bank statement, you looked at your salary, and you know I have X amount of dollars coming in a month. So what's step two? Step two is to find out how much you have going out. If you determine that what you have going out is more than what you have coming in, you have a problem and you need to change what you're doing immediately. Furthermore, if you notice that whatever you have going out is the same amount as what you have coming in, you still need to do something differently, because if you're breaking even at the end of every month, you still have no money left over for an emergency or to do anything of leisure. Now, somebody might say, how can you spend more than what you have coming in? It's actually very easy, because all you're doing each month is just borrowing money from the next month coming. So essentially, you're living in a deficit. And that's why the stress is building up, because you're living in the deficit just off of your regular monthly expenses. And then when something comes up, now you're really further in the hole and you're borrowing money trying to catch up, but you're in the deficit, so you never catch up. It's an extremely vicious cycle. And once you get too far in the trenches of it, it's real hard to get out without some help or without changing up some things drastically. All right. So we're saying that you've noticed, once you looked at that bank account, that you're either breaking even or you're actually coming up short at the end of every month. So what are we going to look at on that bank statement to help us get out of debt or at least start saving some money? In most cases, our bills are our bills, so we're not going to be able to change those too much, minus a few dollars that are probably negligible. What we can do is take a real close look at what we spend on eating out each month. Depending on what numbers you come across, the numbers report that the average American spends a few hundred dollars a month eating out. And that very well could be you and your family. So you just have to take a look to see what you're spending. And after a quick investigation, if you find out that you're one of the ones who is spending that type of bread, maybe it's time to start eating in the house. According to what the statistics say, people are spending thousands of dollars eating out each year. So if you just flipped up your eating habits and started cooking at the house, you'd have that $3,000, $4,000 in your pocket. Another item on that bank statement to look at would be how much you spend on alcohol a year. According to the statistics, people also spend thousands of dollars a year on alcohol. So if you add what you spend on alcohol and what you spend eating out, if you add that up, you have thousands of dollars saved up at the end of the year. So if money is one of your major problems that you stress over, obviously having that money saved up at the end of the year will help alleviate some of that stress. So let's get to it. We can be better. We just have to do it. So just check out your bank statement and see where you can cut some corners. And maybe you'll be able to put the family ahead. That's what we're talking about right here. Less stress and more money will definitely move the family ahead. I'm going to briefly mention a couple other things that help alleviate some stress. One thing we can do is get more sleep. How do we get more sleep? We get more sleep by having less on our plates. If you have less on your plate, there'll be less on your mind, and then your mind will be at ease while you sleep, thus making your sleeping experience more restorative. Because it's one thing to be asleep, and a totally different thing to be sleeping restoratively. And that's the goal. Another thing we can do is try to have some us time, some me time. During this time, you just unplug from the rigors of life and just do some things for yourself that you want to do. It may be a couple hours just to be free and float. And I'm going to pick on the fellas for a quick minute. Because listen, let's be honest. A lot of the times, the fellas with kids, they get me time. They get time to do what they need to do. But oftentimes, women don't. So fellas, if you have a wife, a significant other who has kids, a baby mom, or whatever you want to call it, yo, sometimes you got to take those kids, they're yours, and get them out of the house. Let your mate have her time to just chill and do her thing. If you do that, she'll be better for herself, better for you, and better for her kids. Is that not the goal? Now, I could go on and on about other stresses, but I'm not going to do that. I just wanted to highlight some of the ones that people tend to struggle with the most and offer some solutions on how to get better with them. My point is this with any stressor. Identify the stressor and then find solutions to how you can alleviate the stress. Doesn't matter what it is. Get it off your chest because you can't live with it. It'll break you down. Don't overcomplicate this thing. If your problem is money, then you need to find a job that makes you more money and you need to find ways to cut down on spending money. If your problem is time, then you need to find ways to make more time for you to be free and you need to stop putting extra things on your plate that takes up your time. Remember, we all have it in us to be better than what we're actually doing. Like I said, we just got to have the discipline and the fortitude to do it. All right, everybody. You know what this music indicates? The show is a wrap. We got another one done. It's over. Hey, listen, like always, I want to thank everybody for tuning in. Also, I want to thank Hindsight Media Radio for making this possible. Also, check your boy out on his website, RyanHodgeBooks.com, for all your reading needs. Hey, yo, a lot of information covered today. I hope you learned something. I did too, if you didn't. But listen, we out of here. This has been another episode of Level Up with Ryan Hodge. Later.